Rod is a senior advisor and chief knowledge officer for BRAC USA. Rod has served with BRAC USA in various capacities since 2007 when he started as a volunteer. In 2011, Rod co-authored with BRAC a chapter covering agriculture and microfinance in the book New Pathways Out of Poverty. Prior to joining BRAC full-time, Rod worked for 25 years in the financial services sector. Rod holds an MBA from Duke University. So with that, I'll turn it over to Rod.
Thank you very much. I'd first like to thank the folks from KDAD and MPEP for having us here presenting. I'd also like to thank my colleagues in Tanzania and Technology Willing. We will bring them in, and they will handle the lion's share of the Q&A. We've had some tech issues, as you've all heard, so we will see how that goes. But I would like to thank them for helping me prepare the presentation and for the tremendous support that they've given me throughout this preparation process and in general for the agriculture work that I've done. As you've heard, they've got nearly 50 years experience between them, so I'm a relative piker when it comes to agricultural experience. So I'll be doing the presentation part and then again, Technology Willing, handing off to them for the Q&A. So let's get started. So the we're going to talk about a brief overview of the Bangladesh model, our agriculture model in Bangladesh, and then we'll talk briefly about how we apply the international model, and then we will move into the lead structure and how it differs from our traditional agriculture interventions. And we'll talk a little bit, lead is just a bit over a year old, so we don't have all of the indicators in yet in terms of the challenges and success, but we will talk about some of the outputs and accomplishments as well as some of the challenges we've had and lessons learned. In order to understand the context of LEAD, I want to just give you a bit of a background on BRAC. We're one of the world's largest NGOs based in, and we're based in Bangladesh. We reach the lives of over 125 million people worldwide. These are most of our programs. We have a couple of other programs I didn't list here, but the key ones here that are relevant to the LEAD project are agriculture, microfinance, and social enterprises. And those three programs are sort of relevant for you to know that we have them in terms of sort of informing how we go about our agriculture interventions. So this is an example of the seed value chain. Our agriculture program in Bangladesh is primarily involved in the seed value chain. So from researching seeds, field testing for mass production and marketing. We also do a lot of extension services and training, as well as provision of financial services, and the end result is increase in yields, income, et cetera. This is the dairy value chain. So our agriculture value chain work came about through the recognition. We started out as a microfinance organization, and with the recognition that if we just provide loans to women in poor villages, there isn't enough of the market for them to fully utilize that money and dramatically change their income and social standing. So we realized that the best way we can help improve women's lives was by linking them to markets. So from that early beginnings of linking, for example, in this case, the dairy value chain, linking women to markets through milk collectors. We created 100 chilling stations. We have a dairy in Bangladesh. And importantly, we've got 10 of those milk collection centers are in, 10 of those chilling stations are in ultra-poor areas. So 90 of the 100 are sustainable, profitable chilling centers, but we've maintained as a cross-subsidy 10 of those chilling centers in ultra-poor areas. So we talked about seeds, we talked about dairy. We also have a pretty extensive poultry value chain in Bangladesh. 6 poultry farms, 2 feed mills. We're the main supplier to Kentucky Fried Chicken and Nando's, and I've had our chicken in Dhaka, and I encourage you, if you're in Dhaka, don't hesitate to stop at KFC or Nando's for some of the finest chicken you've ever had. We also have significant market share in the hybrid seed market, and we're the second largest dairy operator in Bangladesh. So massive, large-scale, extremely sustainable, three critical value agriculture value chains. Moving on to international, we're predominantly active in agriculture in 5 countries, in East Africa, South Sudan. And this is the basic organizational model of our international approach. We have regional area coordinators. They oversee program officers who organize 10 to 20 promoters each, and either agriculture promoters or poultry and livestock promoters, depending on the particular value chain. And they then, in turn, reach general farmers and model farmers. Importantly, in our traditional approach, which is in the common languages of development is the implementation approach, we're an actor in the value chain. We are sourcing and supplying the inputs to the promoters and extensively maintaining that network of promoters who then, in turn, provide technical assistance and input supply to the farmers. We also have some amount of social enterprise work in Africa in the seed space and poultry, hatchery, and feed mill. Very early stages, very, very small scale compared to Bangladesh. It is hoped that the social enterprise model will blossom in Africa to the extent that it has in Bangladesh, but it's still early stages in our social enterprise development work. But it is a core part of our traditional agricultural approach. Whoops. Sorry. Am I moving forward or backwards? So some of the lead basics. We're in 40 branches, 15 regions, 30 districts. The project runs through 2017. It's funded by DFID, and we aim to reach over 100,000 actors in the maize and poultry value chain. Some of the key activities we're doing are... Whoops.
I know you want to run around.
Yeah, sorry. Some of the key activities... Whoops.
So you just use the right and left, and then you walk around.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So some of the key activities we're doing, capacity building and training and provision of access to high quality inputs. And here's one of the areas that differs from our traditional approach. We typically will do some amount of market analysis, but the depth of the market analysis we've done through the LEAD project is far greater than we typically have done. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in detail later. Access to finance is another significant departure for us in the LEAD project. We've dabbled, I guess I would say, we've got a little bit of agriculture financial services in Africa, but it's not extensive. With LEAD, there is a fully developed suite of portfolio of products for agriculture finance. Also, we're doing more extensive farmer organization, engagement in private sector, both the small trader up through the large multinational input supplier. And we're also engaged with all value chain actors. In our normal approach, we would typically primarily focus on the direct beneficiaries of our programs. With the LEAD project, we're doing more extensive outreach and training of a broader suite of market actors. And again, this is a facilitation approach. So every agriculture value chain presentation has to have a case study. So here we have a boy named Jack. And Jack was very poor, lived on a small farm with his mom. They had one dairy cow to their name, and that cow wasn't giving very much milk. So his mom said, "Jack, please go out to the market and sell this cow. For whatever you can, we need it to live on." So poor Jack had to go out and sell his beloved cow into the market, and he came across somebody who offered him some improved maize seeds, miracle maize seeds, they were called. So Jack traded his cow for those maize seeds, hoping that he could use those maize seeds to improve their livelihood. Rather than getting cash, he accepted those maize seeds. Jack took those maize seeds to the local seed dealer and says, "How much are these worth? How good are these seeds?" Sadly, a common problem in Tanzania and in many markets, the seed supplier said, "No, these are fraudulent seeds. They're counterfeit. They're not worth anything, Jack." Sadly, Jack was crestfallen. He went to the seed supplier, however, said, "All is not lost, Jack. We know of a program called LEAD. It's run by this organization called BRAC. Here is their office. Go there. Talk to them. They will help you out." So Jack went to our office, and we connected him with the LEAD farmer who brought them into the farmer organization. Jack was able to get improved quality seeds, real quality seeds. He learned about proper practices. He learned the proper use of fertilizer, line spacing, and weeding. And on that small plot of land where they just grew enough corn stalk, enough maize to feed themselves, they were able to grow the next harvest huge amount. Yields increased. They were able to get amazing prices because the LEAD farmer helped link Jack to the markets. And with the corn surplus, the maize surplus, Jack was able to buy some chickens. And you see here the output of those chickens, golden eggs. Now, of course, I use that as a restylized example, and you guys are more expert than I am, but you recognize those aren't maize stalks, that's bean stalks. That is not a chicken, but a goose. But what I will refer to this stage of where we are in the LEAP project, just barely over a year old, the corn stalks to the sky and the golden eggs phase. We are just starting to pass into the reality of the difficulties and challenge of implementing this model, whether it's hiring of consultants, finding consultants, staff turnover. We'll talk in a little bit more detail. But these are the, you know, in seriousness, these are the outcomes that we expect, which are typical value chain outcomes that you would expect, with the exception that there's more significant work on value chain creation. Problems and why, how LEAD intervenes. First, gender, weak market power, lack of inputs, technology, and lack of finance. We are specifically targeting women. We're targeting a minimum of 65% women in the program. It is closer to about 80% in actuality. Also, we provide trading near the homes, flexible hours, because we recognize that women have time poverty, and so by arranging the training that are convenient to their schedule, we're able to get a greater participation of the women, and all the other elements of LEAD, linking to credit, farmer organization, also help that gender empowerment. We've done extensive market research, national and local, to deal with the fragile, inequitable, incomplete, and opaque markets. Knowledge and skill training, not just for our normal, the typical farmers, the general farmers that we would train, but we're also training all intermediaries in the maize and poultry value chain. The challenging social structure, as many of you probably know, trying to get the value chain actors to actually listen, adapt, and adopt improved practices and organizational operations. There's a significant amount of social structure challenges, getting the actors to trust each other, getting the actors to talk to each other and actually create business. And again, because we're facilitating, we are just putting the actors together through facilitation meetings and working groups. Finance typically is very limited available. There's very limited availability in agriculture value chain finance. And in fact, in all of the BRAC countries that we have very limited agriculture finance ourselves. So the LEAD model has an explicit financial services capital component. Low production and income, another challenge. And through the capacity building, training, and linkage with market actors, we hope to improve that. Characteristics of the targeted beneficiaries, these are smallholder farmers, predominantly women, average land size about 2.5 acres, very limited experience with training, quality inputs, and very limited experience with collective marketing of product, average income levels about 100 US. These are the participants. This is when the project is fully rolled out. We are rolling out in stages. As I said, we're through the first year. So we have the LEAD farmer who in turn coordinates 10 to 15 general farmers. We have the poultry promoters. And this is a poultry promoter is designed to provide inputs to the farmer as well as technical assistance, inputs such as feeders, waters, and vaccines. And we're also linking the traders and the agrovets with the LEAD and general farmers. So these are the market actors, both on the input side, the agrovets and dealers, and on the output product side through agriculture and poultry traders and millers, et cetera. So just to frame it, because it can get a bit challenging to understand what BRAC's typical model is versus how LEAD is different, because there is a fair amount of overlap. So here I try to compare, or we try to compare, the two different models. Implementation, and these are just made-up numbers just for illustrative purposes. LEAD is predominantly a facilitation approach, 80%. There is no social enterprises with LEAD, at least with there are no BRAC social enterprises, and I'll talk about our investment fund in a little bit. Extensive market research and analysis. Engagement of value chain actors, value chain financing. We have two different components within the financing realm. We'll talk about those. Farmer organization is more formalized now, and so the farmer organization is helping replace some of the implementation role we've had. And input provision, we do some of it, but it's more limited than it typically is. Minimal subsidies, and unlike our typical programs, we focus specifically on maize and poultry. So these are the four components, drilling into a little bit more detail. of the four components of leave. We have agriculture, agronomic poultry rearing, and management. And this is the typical training agricultural extension services of any value chain development program. There are two components of capital provision, investment fund and financial services, which we'll talk in a little bit more detail. And finally, the fourth component of lead is a market access component. So most of these are what you would typically see in any, whether it's implementation or facilitation approach, cropping practices, disease management, weeding, et cetera, post-harvest practices. And we're also trying to develop the lead farmer as the primary disseminator of knowledge for the farmer and organization of the farmers. And again, we're training other market actors as part of component one. Market actors, we're supporting and linking value chain actors actively doing it through facilitation meetings and working groups to get them to talk together, to trust each other's, and to reduce those social frictions that make market actors hesitant to work cooperatively and effectively with each other, promoting collective marketing arrangements. We've also done, we've also got two agreements with large private sector players on the fertilizer side as well as on the seed side, and they're providing some of the inputs to, the only ones who get inputs in the lead model are the lead farmer, who coordinates the general farmers, as well as the demonstration farmer. And that's a sort of another departure from the BRAC's typical model, where the input provision would go all the way through all of the general farmers. So, and the our partners are also providing technical assistance, more in-depth training on the fertilizer and seed side. So they're assisting us with technical assistance and with input provision. And the market research, we've done some 60 or so very micro-regional market analysis, as well as a macro value chain analysis of both the maize and poultry value chain. Component three, this is an example of our financial services. These are, the component three is meant to be small loans, similar in size to microfinance loans. There are four actors who are providing these services to, the dealers, the traders, the lead farmer, and the general farmer. We have just rolled out the model to the general farmer. It works like our typical village organization model in microfinance. So because it was easiest to build on our operational modalities of microfinance, that was the first product that was rolled out. Very early stages, and we are working on designing the other three programs for the financial services element, and there are seasonal repayment components for the farmers, not for the other input providers, not for the other value chain actors. The value chain investment fund, it's what might be what's in the industry often called a challenge fund, and it's designed to catalyze larger businesses in the value chain, businesses that would be too large for our microfinance services, but not so large that they would be able to get access to bank capital. It's a mix of grants and loans. The grants are estimated to be up 35%, and we expect those to be used for capital equipment, long-term investment. And then we have working capital loan of 60, which is estimated, this will be estimated based on once it's rolled out, of the financial services are going to be loans, commercially viable loans that are going to be managed by BRAC's microfinance organization. These are the types of businesses we'll support. We're nearly finalizing the operational guidelines of the investment value chain, so it has not been rolled out, and it wasn't meant to be rolled out in the first year. It was meant to be a second year activity. And also, I forgot to mention up front, when we go to the Q&A, I'll remind at the end, I view the Q&A as sort of being two-fold information flow. We are just 1 year into this. We are still designing a significant amount of the activities. And so there's an opportunity for the audience, both in the room here and on the phone, to share their ideas and what they have seen, because BRAC, if I've learned anything about BRAC, it's a humble organization, hungry to learn, hungry for outside information. And so as we go to the Q&A, particularly something like the investment fund is very new for BRAC. So anyone who's seen something similar on that or any part of the value chain N4P approach, hopefully the Q&A will stimulate those suggestions, as well as hopefully we can provide answers to the questions you have. So a little bit more detail on the market linkage mechanisms. Again, we talked about the extensive research. Each branch, BREC, specifically identifies the agrovets, input suppliers, and traders, and we link them to the farmers. So we don't just tell the farmers, you go out and find the traders you want to work with, you go out and find the input suppliers, and here's how you do it. We actually will go out and vet the market actors. We will screen them, vet them, and then we will make those connections actively. We also link the poultry promoters with the agrovets for feeders, drinkers, and feed. And then, again, as part of breaking down the social structures, coordinate market facilitation meetings, and we help to organize the committee. So again, an organization role, facilitation role. This is an example from the Dodoma region in Tanzania of an output from one of our market, and there are many more like this. I'm not going to get into the details, but you can see how valuable it is. If you're trying to be a facilitator in that role, you need to understand at an in-depth detail how the market works. So we've went out, both BRAC as well as hiring outside consultants and market experts to review the detailed supply and demand dynamics and operational dynamics in each of the regions that we're working in. So 1 year on, here's some of the outputs and achievements that we have seen. It is early stages, so I won't necessarily say we're going to sustain some of these improvements or that it's going to be broadly applicable once all the numbers are in. But we have seen an increase in the egg and meat production after 1 year with the general poultry farmer, so it's a pretty material increase, 32 and 42% for egg and meat. We've seen the demo farmers, because of the timing of the harvests, we don't have all of the data in terms of the output and marketing from the maize side, but we have some data from the maize surveys, that the demo farmer surveys that we've done, and we've recorded a $350 income from those demo farmers, as well as a significant increase in the yield, nearly a doubling of the yield compared to the general farmer baseline, but it's similar also for the demo farmer. So from 610 kgs to nearly 1,200 kgs. Again, this is very early stages, and the we'll sort of hold off concluding until we've seen the full results from the harvest and sale. Seen some improvements in terms of the traders, their understanding of business, understanding how to manage their costs, keeping their books, making the traders become better business people so they can earn more money, so they can pay more for the farmer's output. Also, we've had a pretty good uptake in the improved services. We've seen a majority of the maize and poultry farmers adopt the improved practices. Moving on to the key challenges, and anyone who's worked in the M4P space and value chain finance space knows that when you move from the golden eggs and corn stalks to the sky, the reality on the ground is much more challenging than is typically seen. So here we're revealing some of our challenges, certainly not all of them. This is an example. When I visited our project, we talked to some of the poultry promoters, and they had a number of challenges with the provision of vaccine. And normally what BRAC does is we would source the vaccine in our normal implementation mode. We would price the vaccine. We would estimate the demand. And we would then sell it to poultry promoters who would then in turn sell it to the farmer. So that BRAC normally would take on the primary role. But in lead, we are handing that role off to the poultry promoters, and we are working with them for them to source it directly, for them to manage all the challenges. So we heard from the poultry promoters that they were having issues with the vaccines. They're having trouble managing the cold chain. Estimating demand was a challenge for those farmers. Despite all the market research, there was still a challenge of how many vials of vaccine do they buy versus how much the farmers. So that was a problem of demand estimation, but also demand stimulation. We had more work to do in terms of stimulating the farmer demand for those vaccines. And again, normally when BRAC's an implementer, it's a bit easier than when we hand it off to the market. So some challenges are there, some of which we've been resolved, but not entirely. Market research is key. We've talked about that. And I say that somewhat facetiously, organizing farmers is the easy part. It isn't so easy to organize farmers, but relative to actually get them to act in a way that optimizes that group structure to ensure that that group organization actually engages in collective marketing, engages in collective purchase of inputs. So instead of each farmer buying a 2 kg bag of seeds or fertilizer, they can buy a 15, 20 kg bag of seeds or fertilizer, getting those market discounts on the input side, getting the higher price on the collective marketing side, getting the local miller who won't come to see a small farmer, getting them actually to come to collect the maize from the farm because it's organized that. So that's how it's supposed to work. As many of you know, organizing farmers sustainably, that sustains after BRAC leaves, and getting them to actually do the collective marketing is a big challenge, and it's still early days in terms of optimizing that organizational structure. Financial services, we've got somewhat limited financial services, but we have the need and the idea to research other products and working with other actors. SACOs, which are savings and credit cooperatives in Tanzania, are a big part of the financial landscape in Tanzania. So working with them, other commercial banks, multinationals, local commercial banks, and also looking at researching into other financial products, whether it be crop insurance, warehouse receipts. And again, this is an area where, despite BRAC's history in financial services, we have less history in agriculture financial services, and partly it's our experience in Bangladesh. It's challenging to make ag finance work. We know some have done it, so any ideas, questions you have on that front would be extremely helpful. Staff dropout has been a challenge. M4P requires a different set of skills than pure facilitation. So trying to find staff with the market knowledge and market expertise is challenging. We are also competing with the government program to hire a lot of folks with similar expertise. Branch selection has been a challenge. We leverage, I didn't mention it, but the branches for LEAD leverage the infrastructure of our microfinance branch. Typically, our microfinance branch would reach out 5 kilometers outside of that branch location. For LEAD, we targeted 10 to 15 kilometers out, but in certain areas, to reach the targeted number of farmers, we've had to reach further out from our branch locations, since our branches tend to be, which is typical, in urban and peri-urban areas, and then the challenges of climate change, which are common to all ag value chain services. So LEAD is a complete market solution. And we know there are others in Tanzania that have many similar elements to LEAD. So it is not the only one. USAID has a number of projects. NAFAKA is one that has some amount of overlap with the LEAD in terms of the operational modalities. So we engage all actors in the value chain, including provision of capacity building and training. Extensive social integration, we talked about the group organization, we talked about working groups, bringing traders together with the farmers. A full suite of commercial financial services, the research and analysis, the work we're doing with the larger private sector entities, and also, we didn't talk about it much because it's early stages, but the LEAD is also a platform for innovating value chain innovation. So, for example, we're exploring an innovative post-harvest storage. As most of you know, there's a big challenge in post-harvest storage, the amount of output lost or damage in the post-harvest process. So storage is key, and we're working on with a partner on that. Also looking at innovations in irrigation, innovations in bringing ICT information to the farmer. So the extensive status of the LEAD program, it's a good sort of innovation incubator. Even though that's not an explicit part of LEAD, it is a natural fallout from the LEAD organizational structure so that we can innovate the products at each point of the value chain, and we can deploy it and test it to enough farmers so that we can actually know whether it works or not. Again, that's early stages. If we get to present in another year, we'll hopefully have more examples of actual implementing some of these innovations. And our hope is that LEAD should result in the most sustainable BRAC project. Moving on to the conclusion, LEAD has the potential to catalyze the maize and poultry market. As the example I had given, the components are necessary but maybe not sufficient to support a facilitation model. One of the challenges, which I don't think I mentioned that was up there, in some of the markets we're in, you just don't have the market actors. If you don't, you may not have a hatchery in some areas. So there may be an actual absence of a market player. And while our investment fund will support existing players and help them grow, it's not a startup fund. So in areas where there is an absence of a business, then we've got to figure out, do we want to step in as implementers? Maybe there will be an opportunity for some startup capital down the road. But it's a challenge because even though Tanzania is reasonably developed compared to other countries we're in, like South Sudan, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, there are still many areas where you don't have those adequately developed value chain actors to facilitate. If you have no one to facilitate, the facilitation process becomes difficult. Bottom line with LEAD is, again, early stages, but we think it's going to move our operations more towards facilitation, but we're not, it's too early to say that we're going to completely move towards a 100% facilitation approach. Again, we are working on a few different social enterprises throughout Africa, and we're still developing those, and the model in Bangladesh, where we develop the social enterprises, we nurture and grow them, and they become four profitable BRAC enterprises, still owned by the NGO. That model, whether that works in Africa, it's early stages. So you can view the social enterprise model that BRAC normally does, where it's BRAC branded, versus the investment fund in LEAD, where we're finding the other actors who already have the businesses and giving them capital and allowing them to grow and providing training to them and linking them to other actors. And so those are sort of two competing models, if you will, of sustainability. We create the enterprise, we get it to generate a profit, which feeds back into the NGO activities, or we stimulate other market actors. And maybe facilitation works more in Tanzania than it would work in Sierra Leone and Liberia, where you may have much less of a market to actually facilitate. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Rod.
Thank you.
So now we're going to move to our Q&A portion of our seminar. So if you do have a question, please raise your hand, state your name and organization, and wait for me or my colleagues to pass you the microphone. We're going to start with the webinar, because I do believe there's been quite a chatter on webinar. So Angelina?
Thank you very much, Joy. We've had a really great, lively conversation happening on the webinar. We have 87 attendees right now joining us from really all over the world. Zimbabwe, Rwanda, China, Spain, Tanzania, London, Washington, D.C., Egypt, Texas, a few cities in Canada, South Africa, the Netherlands. So thank you very much, everyone who's contributing your insights and your questions. We'll get started with, and apologies if I mispronounce your name, Indira Klein, who's here with us in Washington, D.C. She asks, how is cultural and societal norms impacting women's ability to improve household income? And also, what is the loan default rate, if any?
And we're going to, Hem and Dr. Selek, were you able to hear that? So the question was about okay, why don't I try and take that? So the question was about local culture and yeah. Yeah, the loans had just started, and I don't think we've passed any material repayment rate. So we've loaned about $60,000 so far. So it's a bit early. I don't think we've seen any defaults yet. But again, we just started the program last quarter. And I think, you know, within the value chain of poultry landscape, poultry and maize, and we'll follow up with any questions if Hem and Dr. Selek aren't able to check in. But within each component of the value chain, women have, and each country we operate in, women have different cultural hurdles. And I think the key is with LEAD, and I don't know the specifics of within Tanzania of any particular cultural barriers that are unique. We know women have particular roles in the value chain, more active in the manual labor on the farm, less in the preparation. We know we've faced a lot more of that in Bangladesh, cultural challenges for women in particular. But the the goal of LEAD anyway is by specifically targeting women and organizing women is to overcome those cultural barriers, and by having the training again by the located by the women, we help address the time poverty. And
hello,
Hemant Select, do you want to jump in? Can you hear us? And I will say that we will, we talk to the folks at Kate at MPAP Angelina, and there's a method of answering questions offline. We won't even get to every question, but we'll follow up with any answers offline so that it's part of the permanent transcript. So, next question.
Tom Timberg, consultant. The presentation demonstrates why BRAC is one of the most effective development organizations in the world, but it raises an interesting question. As you say, it represents an adjustment of the traditional BRAC model towards the direction of the DFID marketing for the poor approach. It's very interesting, but that raises two questions. One's a theoretical one. When BRAC started its work in Bangladesh in the 1970s, one of its concerns was village elites snatching all the fruits of development. Mm-hmm. And it devoted itself to a considerable extent in positioning itself so that wouldn't happen. Is there some concern about the model that you have here, which involves probably taking somewhat larger, wealthier farmers and making them the means of transmission, might lead to their snatching the products of development? And that connects with the second question, is the way to follow this, of course, is in your monitoring and evaluation. Though you didn't say it, how is the monitoring and evaluation being handled for this project? Is it being handled internally? Is it being handled out of Bangladesh? Do you have, as DFID often does, a separate contract for an outside monitoring and evaluation person? And the related question has to do with the innovation. Even though BRAC has one of Bangladesh's largest and most effective universities as one of its subsidiaries, it's not a agricultural research organization. How do you handle liaison with the kind of people who are developing the technological developments you're interested in? And there's actually a third issue which I might as well raise here. IFPRI has just done a major project in which they say that what's happening in general in East Africa, including Tanzania, is a displacement of the small farmers by larger 40, 50-acre farmers funded by urban middle-class funds. Do you notice that, and are you adjusting to that in any way?
Yeah. Hemant Select, were you able to handle those? Yeah, hear those questions?
Since we've been having issues with them in Tanzania, and they keep kind of coming in and out, I've cut them.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're going to go ahead and respond to your check.
Yeah, so the general farmers themselves, I think, are smallholder farmers, but at 2 acres, they're not the poorest of the poor farmers. So the goal is, when selecting the farmers, is that they are small enough, they have small enough farms so that we're reaching our target market, but also there has to be some ability of those farmers and the farms to actually engage and produce with the market. So I think at 2 acres, it's still considered smallholder farmers, if not the poorest of the poor. And the hope is that with the LEAD farmer, who has a little bit larger land holding, but not dramatically so, that the LEAD farmer and the smallholder farmer, that LEAD farmer acts as that sort of lever that helps support those general farmers. So if that organization is working, the LEAD farmer needs those smallholder farmers because they don't have enough product themselves. They're not large commercial farms. They're slightly larger land holdings. They're going to organize those farmers. They'll be able to enjoy the discounts at the input supplier. They'll be able to go, because they're not large enough to go direct to the miller and have the miller come to them. They're also a smallholder, a little bit larger. If they can organize that output in such a way, the LEAD farmer will actually help prevent that elite capture, and they will, because ultimately, if we're not dealing with that miller who's got the power, there is no elite capture. They are effectively capturing it. So the idea is we break down that elite capture that happens absent the lead program. Now, is there a risk that the lead farmer takes advantage of the smallholder farmers? Again, we hope there's a codependency between the two that will render them, dependent on each other. So there is no, so there's a parity power dynamic within the general farmer and the lead farmer groups. And at least for 4 years, we'll be in there monitoring them, getting feedback from the general farmers and the lead farmers, fixing anything that needs to get fixed. So 4 years is hopefully adequate time for us to identify any of those elite capture issues. And you're right, it's a huge problem in any country. In Bangladesh, it had always been a problem. And sometimes we invite the elite to the table, and you can argue by bringing the larger traders in here, we're actually inviting the elite in and having them part of the program so they can benefit. They get better quality maize, and so that's sort of how. And your other questions was around innovation?
The monitoring and evaluation.
Yeah. So there are a few, there are a number of different elements. BRAC is a little bit unique, particularly in Bangladesh, where we have an extensive research operation arm that's been running for 40 years. So within East Africa, we also have a pretty significant research arm. So we have two elements of the monitoring, I would say. We have.
That's out of Kenya?
No, this is in, yeah, so we have. It's in both Tanzania and Uganda. So it's run out of Uganda, but we also have a research arm in Tanzania. So the research folks in Tanzania will work with the lead researchers and data people in Uganda. And so that's the team. Separately, we have a monitoring approach within Tanzania as well. So we have the research team, and we've gone back and forth on it, but looks like we're going to be creating a randomized control trial. And sometimes we do work with outside researchers, but so far in this case, and it may be TBD, that we often will work with outside universities and research arms to jointly conduct impact research. But here we didn't randomize at the first rollout, so we couldn't do an RCT. But on our second rollout, we're looking at randomizing, creating a new baseline and creating a treatment and control group so we can run an RCT. But it is challenging. A lot of the metrics are self-reported. Can you get all of the details on the entire costs of the farmers? Can you get the actual sale price for all of the farmers? It will be challenging. We have metrics like percentage sold through collective marketing, self-reported nutrition and health metrics. So there's 20-something monitoring evaluation. Some of them are collected annually. Some of them are collected monthly, and so we have a performance monitoring plan that governs that. And again, depending on how complicated it is to collect the metric, it will be collected more frequently or once a year in some cases.
Let's take a question from the webinar.
Sure. Ashwini Saxena from Zimbabwe asks, or says, on slide 16, you discussed income increases for rural poor, marginal farmers, and livestock keepers, but the outcomes expected are not fully in line with all of the key stakeholders in mind. Can you expound upon this a little bit, please?
Say that again.
Income increases for rural poor, marginal farmers, and livestock keepers, but the outcomes expected aren't fully in line with those key stakeholders. So can you expound upon that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. We're showing the poultry farmers and the maize farmers, and I'm not sure if she's referring to the other value chain actors or what that might refer to. But we do show, again, that we don't have the full suite of results from the maize farming yet because of the timing of the harvest and sale. And we do show the impact on the general poultry farmers from the poultry interventions. And again, with some of the data is collected annually, so I think we're just in the process of collecting that first, finishing up the collection and collation of that first year of data for some of the additional metrics. And we have a lot more data, so if anyone in the audience has a question on any particular actor, any particular metric, ask the question through the webinar, and we'll come back to you with whether we're collecting a metric, and maybe you'll give us some ideas from additional data to include, although I'm sure our research people and monitoring won't envy the idea of collecting additional data, but we'd love to hear the feedback, and we can dialogue through the post-webinar process.
Good morning, Kevin Fath with Bureau for Food Security at USAID. I'm curious to know with whom the results of your market analysis and research are being shared. Will those data become publicly available? Also curious about whether there's opportunities to transfer knowledge and skills to extension services of the state so that they might be able to sustain it or replicate your model in the future.
Yeah, it's good questions. So the market analysis, and this is something where we'd follow off offline, typically the documents produced within our agriculture, they're typically not made public, not because we don't want to. Often we will hire an outside person to do that. I know the market analysis, we've hired out the value chain reports. The entity we hired has done other published reports on value chain in Tanzania, so might have similar results, but I'm not sure who owns the rights to publish that, but we can come back and see what, because I've seen at least 5 or 10 of the specific market reports, and they're 10 or 15 page detailing that. So there are reports produced. Sometimes information is just in the field and not documented, but the market analysis reports, we do have a fair amount of documentation on that, and we could see how we can share that either as a one-off or maybe with the broader group, and I think we can post documents. But again, I'm not sure if we are willing or able to share some of those, because some of it was produced for us on behalf of consultants. And your other question was?
It was about opportunities to transfer the skills.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the players who, they're not an explicit target of LEAD, but we are working extensively with the local extension services, both the agriculture and livestock, and when I was visiting Tanzania, we met with them. So they're fully aware of our program. There's not a specific training element to them, but there's very close interaction. In fact, we use them to help in the farmer selection process, and we dialogue with them in terms of what are the problems. As is typical with the government extension offices, they said, we don't have transport. We can't get our people out to the field to do the extension work, and we don't have enough of them. So the lack of funds to actually do effective extension services, not much BRAC can do other than learn from them, teach them what we're learning, and vice versa. And we view them as a partner, not necessarily a beneficiary of the program. But we are working both with the, at the regional and national level with the poultry and live, the maize and the agriculture and livestock extension officers.
From one of our webinar participants. Her name is Marcella Willis. She's joining us from Net Hope Payment Innovations Project based here in Washington, D.C. And she asks, do you incorporate mobile money or digital payments to facilitate payment transactions at any stage of the program, either paying training per diems to farmers or using it to pay supplier inputs or for poultry extension agent performance payments?
Not doing that now. We are talking to one of the mobile money providers about providing information to farmers, so digital information provision to farmer via text messages. We do in our SME program have, I think it's been converted, 100% of our small medium enterprise have been converted to mobile loan repayment. So the fact that we are doing it on a large scale with our SME clients in Tanzania, it's not happening now, but again, because we're not, the mobile repayment doesn't work really with the group repayment methodology that we're currently rolled out, but once we start expanding to small, medium enterprises, and part of the takeaways is we get more clients for our SME. If we are linking an input supplier to the program, they may borrow from our SME program. They're not considered a LEAD beneficiary, but they'll borrow through the SME program, and then they will take advantage of the mobile money repayments that we're doing in our SME program. So microfinance not doing it, and therefore the financial services are too small for mobile money, but maybe on the larger loans in the investment fund and other actors that are connected to BRAC financial services outside of LEAD will naturally get that mobile money repayment benefit.
Good
Kristen Oplanik, USAID. Our office, you know, we spend all of our days trying to get more people to do facilitation because we think it is the right approach to this kind of development work. So I'm very curious as to what drove the decision to make the pivot from being an implementer to being a facilitator, and how are you learning what to do? Because facilitation is really hard. It's not an easy thing to just suddenly make that shift. So just in terms of kind of the motivation and the operationally how.
Yeah.
But congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think part of our moving towards that, frankly, is a reflection of, in part, the large development agencies like USAID and DFID moving towards that. So moving more towards a facilitation approach, an M4P approach. Also, we constantly ask ourselves, how do we become sustainable in Africa? We've achieved that nearly completely in Bangladesh. How do we become sustainable? The only revenue-generating source that we can do in Africa are very small social enterprises, and we're not convinced we can grow social enterprises by BRAC. So we've been wrestling with the sustainability question for a while. Along comes the lead proposal, and I suspect we have a very strong partnership with DFID in Bangladesh. We have a strategic partner agreement. I suspect it was dialogue, and I wasn't involved in that. I suspect it was dialogue happening all the time, us recognizing that that's the direction of where the best thinking is going in terms of facilitation, as well as BRAC wrestling with the sustainability, because our normal extension services, we can step out of that, but if we're supplying all those inputs, we're buying them and selling them, once we step out, it's very hard to imagine the farmer can step in on day one. In fact, we're looking at phasing out some of those. We're doing a reverse RCT in Uganda where we're looking at the impact of phasing out some of our agriculture activities because of funding and comparing them to those where we're continuing them. It is difficult, and there is one role that I haven't talked about. I think it's in your. We have an org chart in the handouts. We have a market development officers, which is a new role, and they are a specific dedicated resource helping with the market development aspect. We've done a significant amount of hiring of consultants, and in fact, a lot of the delays in launching the project was in finding consultants. So we're engaging in outside expertise. To a far greater degree, because it's a very good input. It's very challenging to do, and BRAC doesn't have that intense market development experience, at least in Africa. So it's mostly hiring dedicated market development officers, as well as engaging a number of outside consultants on the research side, as well as the regional market analysis side.
Eric White, Integra LLC. My question is just on the agricultural finance piece of this. It's this specifically how you're doing it in Tanzania. From the little information I have about BRAC is that in Bangladesh you actually operate your own microfinance bank. So did you incorporate a microfinance bank in Tanzania? Or are you working through local partners? Do you have commercial bank partners? How's that being set up?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I, as I was paring down the presentation, I didn't get to do a background on each country, but we have a microfinance operation in Tanzania already running. So what we've done is we've taken the agriculture finance, and in order to make it operationally efficient, we basically took a lot of the underwriting, farmer organization, borrower selection process, the loan underwriting process, and we basically have mirrored, modified to the extent necessary for the agriculture side. So we are leveraging the operational infrastructure of our financial services. We don't have a savings arm. It's a non-depository microfinance organization. So, you know, that's where I think farmers may not only want to borrow, they may want to save, and offering them a savings product, which we can't do, but maybe linking up with other partners. I had mentioned the savings and credit cooperatives as being a potential partner in the future. But we have microfinance operations in all of our African countries other than South Sudan, which we had to close down because of unrest. This gentleman, I think. Oh.
We have another question. Sorry. From Anna Garlock from ADA Avoca here in Washington, D.C. She notes that an earlier slide showed 6,000 lead farmers. She's wondering, is that a goal or is that the current number? And if it's the latter, that's pretty impressive for the first year. So how are you identifying these lead farmers? What's the incentive for them to participate, and will you be analyzing your results by lead farmer characteristics, meaning male versus female, so better than another,
poor versus rich did better than each other, older versus younger?
Yeah, we've got we could share more details, but we are the lead farmer is a beneficiary, and so we'll be part of the monitoring and evaluation. And I think the slide she may have been referring to is the total project slide. And so that is, we are ramping up over that period of time. So we haven't, I show the amount of general farmers. Let me flip to the, there's a couple of places where, yeah, so here we show the general farmers, but not the lead farmers. And so the slide, just so everyone's on the same page, so it's 8,000 lead farmers is during the total project period. So that's over the that's the entire project period, and we're scaling up 1 year by 1 year. And I think we're the first year we were about 1/4 the way through in terms of general farmers. And because it's 10 to 15 general farmers per lead, you can do the math on how many lead farmers we've reached.
Chris McRae. So I've got a sort of question on sort of job descriptions for the poorest, because my understanding of, let's say, the poultry value chain back in Bangladesh was that it started around 4 or 5 micro-franchises, like what would be the sustainable job for having a flock of chickens in the village, or how would you define the job description of the poultry vet so that it was so that you had 50,000 of them or 150,000 of the poultry flock people. What I'm trying to understand is, when you look at those sort of jobs or relationship contacts on that chart, you don't seem to have any goal for the smallest or the poorest. And maybe it's because, I mean, is there some, for example, when it comes to your maize crop science, have you developed some crop which gives specific advantage to smaller farmer holdholders in maize or something? So where is the poorest in this whole value chain?
Yeah. So the, you know, as I had talked about, the average farmer here is 2 acres, which is poor but not the ultra poor. And again, the idea is if you're able to stimulate markets for smallholder farmers in general, then, and we have a I didn't talk about it, but we have a separate project in Tanzania that is more along our traditional lines. And I think it's a project also with DFID, and it is a kitchen, garden, and backyard poultry market. So in order to not taint the two projects, we've got the what's called the GPAF project, which are backyard poultry and kitchen gardens with maize and other crops. And so those are dealing with much smaller, much poorer farmers. So we're addressing ultra-poor, I don't know if I'd call them ultra-poor, but much lower on the sort of the landholding scale through the GPAF program. And here we're dealing with, because it's an M4P, we're dealing with larger. Is there an explicit element for ultra-poor in the lead project? I'm not sure I can say. We can answer offline. Separately, BRAC has an ultra-poor program in Bangladesh because, to your point, we were not reaching the ultra-poor with microfinance. And so the ultra-poor program was designed to capture individuals who are too poor to be able to have enough livelihood to repay microfinance loans. And so we are looking at that ultra-poor program and exporting that to other countries, including Tanzania. So that would handle that question in general, not just for ultra-poor farmers, but ultra-poor in general. And the hope is that if you're stimulating the value chain and you're giving more income to the smallholder farmers, those smaller holders, the one-acre farmers who are providing services to the larger farmers, the mid-sized farmers have more money to buy the services and hire the people. And if we're growing SMEs, the SMEs themselves will be hiring more people and adding staff, whether it's a miller or a trader, et cetera. So by building the SMEs through the investment fund, they will add employment, which helps the ultra-poor. And by creating stronger sort of low-middle-sized farmers, we're creating potential output for products and services by the ultra-poor. But you're right, they're not an explicit targeted beneficiary, but I would say implicit. And again, we've got other services that we have that are designed to reach the ultra-poor. Because it's the same question on our microfinance. We're not reaching the ultra-poor.
Hi, Brett Sedgwick from Global Communities. We're about to get started on a loan guarantee fund in Tanzania, so we're looking forward to working closely with you, and I think there'll be a lot of opportunities to to find work together. My question is about the to go back to the investment fund, and you know, we found that a lot of times if the borrower is the borrower's business model is dependent on the same organization, on the NGO, but also receiving financing from the same NGO, then that really can mess with repayment rates. And so I was wondering if you guys have a plan for that, or if you're separating your interactions from the lending, or how you're addressing that.
Yeah, so the if I understand your question, the investment fund itself is not necessarily targeted to direct beneficiaries of the program. There'll be indirect beneficiaries through potentially training and linkages. But the investment fund is operated, and I didn't talk about the deep operational details of that, but we have a technical advisory committee who oversees that. We will be reviewing first at a concept note level. Once we approve a shortlist for the concept note, we'll be moving to final application. So they'll be independently underwritten and reviewed by our SME program. So they'll be the financial, the loan, the small loan is run under our financials, our microfinance. And the investment challenge fund will be coordinated with our SME fund. So they are a revenue generating sustainable entity separate from the lead project. And so they have no interest in approving a loan that will ultimately default simply because that farmer. Now, if that farmer views them as having benefits from the lead program, and therefore that's why they're taking the loan, but of course in the underwriting we'll consider that farmer's income as it is today. If we think it's going to improve because of lead interventions, I'm not sure we may take that into account. But there is it's a separate committee that approves those investment funds, and not the lead and not the direct lead program staff. And again, because of the I forgot if it's a hard line or dotted line to the SME loan program, that's independent evaluation of the risk. And the technical advisory committee is meant to approve the best entities with the best business prospects, but also that have social value.
Let's take one last question from the room. And again, if we didn't get to your question either in the room or webinar, please let us know, and we can work with Rod to get you that answer.
My name is Sylvia. I'm an M4P consultant, and until recently I was managing a large M4P project in Nigeria. So I found it interesting when you mentioned that you find it difficult to find qualified staff that have the very unique M4P skills that you require. That's something that I can very much relate to. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering how you bridge that gap. So you said that you resort to the use of consultant when you can find qualified people. So that's something that I have experienced, and I was wondering how you manage to work with your technical staff and your M4P consultant, and how you manage to get that set of skills transferred onto them so that they don't continue working in the wrong way, and they can actually integrate, understand, and incorporate the M4P principles into their everyday work.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and some of the consultants we hired were not hired because we couldn't find staff, but because it was designed to be a short-term project. And ultimately, we were able to hire all the staff we needed to. We have an extensive training program, not only for the general farmers, which we talked about, but also for anyone we hire who, if they don't have the direct relevant experience, we have training for them. More broadly, your question goes around HR issues, and turnover in M4P is harder because it is in demand and it's a harder skill set. But it's an issue we face in all of our programs, keeping and retaining good staff. And it's through recently implemented HR policies, thinking more broadly about how do you retain staff beyond just the compensation level, because frankly, we often get outbid by the Western NGOs. We are a Southern NGO, and we pay like a Southern NGO, and we lost our lead researcher in Sierra Leone to a Western organization who paid more. So we have to work harder outside of the compensation to develop the incentives, promotions, trainings, and just through a feedback mechanism to retain staff. But we've overcome most of those problems. We've been able to find most of the staff, and I think I forget which component of the staff, and we had a 15% turnover, which I think is higher than normal, but not dramatically outside of the turnover we've seen. So I think we've resolved the initial staffing. It delayed the project starting up, but I think we're okay there. But we'll come back with more details on specific training for those brought into, like the market development officers. I don't know the specific training for them, but we'll come back, because those are the people who have the unique skill set, and maybe we're hiring people who don't have as much knowledge as needed for the job.
Great. So please join me in thanking Rod and Brack and Brack International.